Guys, if you haven't checked up on our social media recently, what have you been doing? I'm at Nick Hardwick, and Jamie is at jamie.hardwick. That's J-A-Y-M-E with a period, and then Hardwick, which is not to be confused with the other Jamie Hardwick, who I tagged a little while ago on Instagram, and she notified me that you may want to get this straight, bud. Your wife may be pissed at you. That earned me the Worst Husband of the Week award. Sorry, babe. Anyway, you guys know that Lose Like Alignment is going off. I'm sure you've seen some of the ads circulating. Hundreds of men now are losing staggering amounts of weight on a daily basis. It's been so awesome to see. And of course, I had no idea that life would turn into this for me or for us. I just had to get the information out of my head, share it with others, see if it could help people reclaim their lives. And lo and behold, it has. And I am just really grateful to be a part of this amazing team. And the most fulfilling thing for me and the program is the weekly interactions that we get through the accountability network. So sign up for that. It is awesome to get personal connections and have conversations and get to understand who people are, what their challenges are, and assist on a very personal basis, on a weekly basis. So as this was all going on, we're getting crazy amounts of requests from the ladies wondering if this program is good for them too. And for me, I said, sure, yeah, it is. But really, since the beginning, I've tried to get Jamie to give my plan a try, and she would try it for a day or two and then basically tell me it wasn't for her. And finally, listening to the requests on social media and through email for a female version, and then getting some feedback back from females who are actually in the program and taking that into account, and then asking and not telling Jamie what could make this plan work for her and for other females, she went, took the parts from the men's program that she liked, modified it to accommodate the female body and your guys' individual preferences, and gave it a try. And I tread lightly saying this to her. Thankfully, she's not around right now. But it's been super cool watching her own this program. She has gained control back over the food, has reset her hunger cues, and has lost the weight she's been trying to lose really forever. I know. I don't think she has anything to lose either. But still, she's getting to a place where she feels great about her body. And that is important. In fact, I just get out of the bathroom and she says, I've lost this weight, but Nick, I've lost an inch off of my waist. She's taken measurements. So we sent the adjustments back to our design team, and voila, the Lose Like a Lady program is born. We would love for you guys to join the team. If you want to know more, all food preferences and eating styles work within the framework we provide in both the men's and the women's program. We do provide body weight only workouts and daily activities known as every hour on the hour exercises, EHO. But guess what? As we tell everyone, the exercise is the least important component of the plan. It's not required to lose weight. If you don't want to exercise, or you've got your own form of exercise that you would rather do, do that. We are never going to discourage that. This program will help you figure out what works best for you. You're going to learn appropriate caloric loads for the day and per meal. You're going to learn how to match your caloric intake with daily activity levels. You're going to break free from the having to eat a meal every 3 hours cycle. It really is an incredibly empowering experience. Also, the program helps build healthy self-care habits that make the program sustainable for life. And it's wonderful when you figure out that the more you take care of yourself, the healthier, the easier it is to make good choices when it comes to food, when it comes to exercise. And the best part about the program that a lot of people find is it's 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off of the plan. That is what we call a diet break. How many programs encourage you to not do the diet? We do that so you're going to build trust with yourself. You're going to take the skills you learned and you're going to put them to test in the real world. The whole process, it's incredibly empowering. When you reclaim your health, you really do reclaim your life. Join our teams. Sign up at hardwick.life. It's like hardwick.com, but hardwick.life. And use the code podcast20 for 20% off the order. And by the way, you can use that code forever on anything site-wide forever. And we want you to know that we're here for you. You can email me directly at nick@nickhardwick.com. I do. I get back to everybody. Try it. Try me. I'll get back to you. Anything you have. Show recommendations, any questions, any support, any criticism. We're here for that. Throw everything my way. You need help modifying this program to suit your particular needs? All you got to do is ask. We've helped hundreds of people make this program work in their lives, and you can too. All right, guys, back to the show. Check it out, hardwick.life, podcast 20 for 20% off, and we hope to see you on the network soon. Love you guys. Thank you. All right. Let's get to know our guy, our director of nutrition. How about that title? Casey Thomas, RD, which if you guys out there don't know, RD means registered dietitian, which requires how much school, Casey? How much additional on top of regular schooling is an RD?
So you got to become a master's level person. You need a master's degree. So you get two extra years of schooling, and then you actually have to go in and do an extra 1,200 rotation hours in a bunch of different areas so that we get that hands-on experience. And then you have to sit for an examination and pass that exam, and then finally you're a registered dietitian. But similar to other health professionals, they will make us do continuing education. So every 5 years, we have to resubmit and prove that we still know our stuff. Very different from just a nutritionist.
No kidding. Yeah, exactly. Explain that difference. Because anybody, like I could claim to be a nutritionist, but I'm not a registered dietitian. And I certainly didn't go and do a 1,200 hours logged at a hospital or wherever that was. I mean, that's an additional half year of work. This is crazy. While you're studying for the exam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, back in the day, I was a nutritionist myself. You know, I was a practicing nutritionist, but essentially it's an unprotected term. And it literally means anyone can claim to be a nutritionist. You know, I think like our parents and grandmas who have very big opinions about nutrition, you know, they'd say that they're nutritionists. but anybody can claim to be a nutritionist. A dietitian is a credentialed term. In some states, you require registration. In other states, you actually get a license. So it is a true healthcare professional. And it is, in general, just a true professional. These are the people who have done the schooling. They understand the science. We have to take classes in things like organic chemistry, you know, microbiology, like all of these like hard science classes that a lot of people shy away from because we really want to understand the mechanisms behind things like digestion, metabolism, exercise, how that relates to nutrient use and all those kind of things. And that's not to say that any nutritionist or all nutritionists are bad nutritionists. I know many very intelligent nutritionists. I know many people who are highly successful. But you know right out the door if someone has the RD that they put in the time and they are, you know, at least base level competency, which is nice.
It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of study and a lot of research. And I love the ongoing education component of it. Casey, give us your background. Where are you from? What are you into? Give us a little bit.
Yeah, I actually grew up in Southern California. And I did travel around a little bit during my college years, but I guess the first thing I'll say is I was actually a neurobiology undergraduate, and I was having aspirations to be like a brain surgeon or something like that. But when I actually started doing my rotations and shadowing some doctors, I was like, oof, this is really not for me. I said, this is not where I want to be. This is not my space.
What didn't you like about it?
I think it was, I mean, and I ran into the same exact issue when I went and did my clinical rotation. It's just, it was kind of depressing for me to have my paycheck depend on someone else's illness. And it was like, there were a lot of really sad cases that I would take home with me. I was actually getting like depressed about it. I was like shattering. I was like, man, this is just dark. Like, you know, the doctors kind of talk, you know, callously about patients dying and things like that. They're just like, oh yeah, we lost another one today. It's like, that's sad to me. Like I watched their family like cry around this guy that just passed away, you know, like that kind of hurt me. And so a lot of these conditions that you see in the hospital though, they're preventable because they're chronic conditions that could have been prevented if someone had, you know, followed a generally healthier lifestyle earlier in life. And I think that if I'm hoping for people to get sick, for me to get paid, that's kind of a bad sticky situation for me, right? Like if everybody's healthy, I want that. I want everybody to be healthy. But then it's like, you know, it just puts me in this weird moral dilemma. And so I like working with more healthy people, at least on that side of the spectrum, and just helping them get better or improve themselves in some way. The really, really deep clinical stuff, that was just something that I didn't think was for me.
It's almost the optimist versus the pessimist. And it's not like as a doctor, you're not waiting for people to get sick, but you know that they're going to be sick, that they're going to come to you. And like you said, a lot of chronic illnesses stack up. And is that how you got into nutrition? Is that what was the moment that said, all right, I'm going to take this back from treating the illness to maybe work in more lifestyle intervention?
Sure. And so that was one of the things that really made me start entering into the nutrition thing. It was, I was seeing these doctors, I was seeing these people who had preventable diseases that could be fixed largely through nutrition. And nutrition was always something that had fascinated me. I'll say, I love research in general, like scientific research, and I love experimenting on myself. And the one thing about nutrition that always fascinated me was that it has a very low barrier to entry. So what I mean by that was, I was reading research in like physics, and it's like, oh, okay, well, if I want to test this out, I need to go build a multi-million-dollar particle accelerator. That's not going to happen. You know, I'd read about astronomy. It's like, oh, well, I just need access to the Hubble telescope for a little bit. That's not going to happen anytime soon. You know, like, you're reading about all these different scientific fields and you're like, this stuff is interesting. And then if I want to go home and do that, I don't have the budget to, you know, spend billions of dollars to build out, you know, SpaceX or whatever. But with nutrition, I could read a little bit of research and I could immediately go try it myself. I could run to the supermarket, spend 10 bucks, try out some new, you know, like, oh, this article said blueberries are good. Well, I'm going to go buy a basket of blueberries and eat just like, you know, a pound a day or whatever. I can do that and see how it affects me. So nutrition has just always been something that really fascinates me. And that paired with, you know, when I started doing my shadowings in the hospitals, I was like, you know what, nutrition is something that really plays a big part in people's lives. We have an obesity epidemic. We have all these problems in America. And the science is pretty clear that you can prevent a lot of these problems with nutrition. That's not to say nutrition is the single most important thing in life at all, but nutrition is a large component that a lot of people overlook. And I don't really blame people. Getting a little bit into it, like, I don't blame people, because there's teams of PhDs who are smarter than me and they're working for these big businesses and they're creating like a true formula for these foods to get consumers hooked on them. Whether that's like the right ratio of carbs or sugar or fats or salt, like, they will literally science the hell out of it to get you hooked. And that's tough. And then when you add in the fact that, you know, there's a fast food joint on every single corner, it's just constantly in your face. You no longer have to hunt for food. You don't have to forage for food. You can just go spend a dollar at McDonald's and get a sweet tea that's got, you know, 800 calories or whatever in there. You know, it doesn't surprise me that people have issues. Okay, I don't blame anyone. But one thing that I do have problems with is when people will... Probably going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but
no, I appreciate it. I'm into this.
Whenever people notice that they have a problem, but then they don't do anything to correct the situation, that's where I run into issues with people. It's okay to be ignorant, but once you know that you're ignorant, then you should be working to correct the situation. And if you're not working forward, you know, if you're not taking steps, then you cease having the right to complain about it. You can't complain about being, you know, if you know that you're eating 10 pounds of, you know, fried chicken every day and you're like, that's my big problem. And I hate that, you know, I do this. Well, you should do something about that. And you should take steps to try to reduce that.
Yes. Yeah. When you know there's an issue and you know you're being marketed, you know you're being scienced with the taste and the palate and the construction of the food and hyper palatable, and you know you're have all the access, but you're still not doing anything. The issue I have is, yes, I do think you should be working to get better. But an issue that I have is blaming others when you know better, and blaming situations and blaming companies and blaming, if you know better, you're the one to blame.
Right. Yeah. And I think just owning up and taking responsibility is really important. And like I said, it's totally fine to be ignorant. And it's totally like most of America is completely ignorant about nutrition, what good nutrition is. And there's so much misinformation in the media that it's hard to trust and hard to know what's legitimate and what's not. And that's fine. That's fine. Like, I have no problem with you if you're like, hey, I recognize, like, but you should now say, okay, well, let me go to a true nutrition professional. Let's speak with a registered dietitian, or let's speak with, you know, a true strength coach for exercise help or whatever it is, right? Speak to the real professional, take the steps you need to start improving yourself. And it's as simple as that. I don't know if I answered your background question.
I love it. No, I love it. Cause we got off on a little side tangent. That was awesome. Give me a little bit, like, what were you like as a kid? What were you into? What sports did you play? Did you play sports through high school or no? Or, and where'd you go to college?
Yeah. So I grew up, I played all sorts of sports. I think I started out playing soccer and baseball the most. And then in middle school, I dabbled a little bit in football. And then high school, I pretty much did every single sport. I love sprints. I'm really bad at endurance activities. That was probably the only thing that I was good at that I could, you know, somewhat compete. I even did a stint of badminton 1 year. They immediately threw me into the varsity team because the net is like up to here. I'm 6'5". So like the net is like here on me. And so like, I could just spike it down.
So are that you was, 6'5"?
Yeah, I'm 6'5".
Awesome.
So that was fun for me to, you know, everybody who was playing at the time, you know, very short, and I could just spike it. So I had an unfair advantage. So they threw me on varsity immediately. I did it for 1 year. That was fun. But I was never good enough to, you know, I couldn't make it in college. Like I had no aspirations. You know, I knew my talent level like was not very high, but I do love being physically active. So despite the fact that I, you know, I might not be very skilled. I had some friends who played at the collegiate level. I don't have any personal friends, you know, that I grew up with who went on to the professional level, but I do have some who played at the collegiate level. You know, sometimes we do like pickup games over the weekend for, you know, whether it's basketball or whatever. They destroy me. You know, I was never good enough, which is fine. It's more about having a good time and just enjoying, right, you know, the company and the activity. But probably my favorite physical activity things that I do, I used to rock climb a lot with my mom, actually. I have the cool. same birthday as her, and we used to go rock climbing on our birthdays, which was a fun little thing. I love hiking, and recently I really have been getting into, well, before COVID, the obstacle course races, like, you know, Spartan race or the Tough Mudder, like those kind of things.
Those are great.
So that's fun. When I was working with UCLA, the strength coaches had a tradition where every Memorial Day, they would do a barbecue plus a Murph, which is a workout.
It's coming up.
Yeah. Which
I'm doing that in Florida on Monday.
Are you doing the Murph?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So your time is probably like way better than my time. And we
can't run, dude.
We had a strength coach, I can't remember who, like, he did it in literally like 20 something minutes. And I was just like, you could do it like three times in the time it takes me to do it.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, these guys were very fit, and I'm like, dude, I'm the nutrition guy. Like, you can't expect me to keep up with the coaches. Like, obviously
I don't live in the weight room. I'm in the room next to the weight room.
Yeah, exactly. So no, I used to love hanging out with the strength coaches, and, you know, I do workouts with them. They'd crush me. But I mean, I still stay very physically active, and I love doing that kind of stuff. Growing up, that's been fun for me. Is just, I love being outdoors. You know, when I was a kid, it was, come home from school, and then my parents would say, okay, if you finish your homework, you're allowed to go outside and play. And that was what I did. So then I went outside, you know, we'd bike, we'd rollerblade, we'd skateboard, we'd play sports, we'd climb trees, you know, just in general, that was what I did. And the only rule was be home before dark. So, you know, I would rush to finish my homework. So that way I'd be allowed to go outside and hang out with the boys, you know, around the corner.
That's great.
But yeah, so that was me growing up.
Do you lift now?
So just bought a new house, and we don't have any equipment yet, but I just bought a squat rack and I'm going to be putting it in the garage, and I'm hoping to get that situated in the next month or so. So in the last like 2 months, I haven't really had access to a whole lot as far as lifting equipment. Mainly I was doing just bodyweight exercises and things like that, where, you know, I do push up, pull up squats, like bodyweight squats. I have, you know, a weight vest, and, you know, I'd run around and do that kind of stuff. But with COVID, I didn't get a chance to go to the gym very much. You know, I might've been able to sneak into a facility here and there, but I didn't get to lift too much there. So my lifting experience right now has regressed because I haven't done any serious lifting for probably like almost 2 years now because of COVID. But I'm hoping that it's going to change and I'm going to get back into it in the next couple of weeks or so. I've already ordered the stuff, so it's coming.
But as you know, you can stay in pretty daggone impressive shape without even lifting weights if you just handle your nutrition. I know a guy, if you want to talk to him, they could get you dialed in for nutrition. No.
No, the nutrition piece definitely helps me stay. I mean, I notice it on myself. I've been, for me, going back to the, you know, I like to test things on myself. At heart, I consider myself a nutrition guinea pig. Like, I will, any diet you can think of, I have done. Any supplement you can think of, I have taken. What I would do is I would science myself. I do 30 days on the diet, 30 days on the supplement, whatever it is. I have these notebooks. They're mine. I don't want anyone to see these because they're embarrassing. Like, I write about stuff where it's like, hey, this is my sleep patterns. This was my mood. This is, I actually would get blood work before and after. I'd pre-post test myself. My doctors hated me because I was doing this like every other month. And they're like, dude, what are you doing this time? This is crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I know this diet is going to be absolutely trash for me, but I got to try it because I got to try it. Like, I need the experience. I need to show that I've walked the walk. So yeah, I would do that. And there was actually one diet where I knew it was going to be really bad. And my blood levels were in a really bad spot for about 6 months before they recovered from that.
This is the GOMAD. This is the gallon of milk a day.
Yeah. Oh, I did tell you about that one. Yeah.
Was it a gallon of milk on top of everything else you were having? So how many, oh, a gallon of whole milk. Oh, good night. So how many calories in a gallon?
I believe, if I remember right, it was somewhere around like 2,500 calories for the gallon. And then I had to do that on top. Man, I got like so gassy, so stuff was coming out of both ends. You know, I was like, I can't do this anymore.
like, just run the blood work. We're 2 weeks in. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly.
How many other calories were you having on top of the 2,500?
So at the start, I tried to keep it like, I tried to just add the gallon of milk in addition to my normal habitual intake. So at that time, I think I was doing like, this was a few years ago, but this was probably like 25 to 3,000 calories, something like that. So I was over about 5,000 calories a day. And after the first like week, I started having mad stomach issues. And so my other intake slowly, you know, I tried to stay as diligent as I could, but slowly started decreasing. My stomach just couldn't handle it anymore. And by the end of it, I was so happy to get off. And the sad thing too, is that like milk was like one of my favorite drinks growing up. And this kind of like ruined it for me. And now I like, you know, I'm getting back into it. Like, I'm okay with it, but I can't drink a lot of milk like I used to when I was a kid. That was like literally my favorite thing. Like, I used to love having a glass of milk with just like, you know, dinner.
Ice cold milk. Yeah. So good.
And yeah, that turned me off of it for a good time. I'm only just now starting to get back into it. And I had to like ease my way in with like other kinds of milk. So anyway, yeah, that was a fun one.
Do you think, this is just a little side off of this, do you think if you would have exclusively had the milk at 2,500 calories, how jacked up would the blood have been if you just would have done that and maybe thrown in some veggies here and there?
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, was you would have to throw in some kind of plant matter just to give some bulk to your stool, because it was already pretty runny, you know. But you need to add some kind of something to beef that up a little bit. You can't just be doing milk. But if I wasn't at such a calorie excess, I suspect that the blood levels would have been slightly more favorable. I've done a little bit more research into dairy these days, and I'm actually curious. I might want to redo it one day. I've thought about it. I might redo it, do it another 30-day stint to the GOMAD.
Go back to it.
But the reason is because when I did it, well, a little bit of context. So in America, the standards for cattle and cows are much lower than in other countries. Mm-hmm. And when I did it the first go around, I was using just like the cheapest milk I could find. So I spent like, just like your generic store brand, you know, whole milk kind of thing.
Right.
And what I probably should have been doing was been using like a non-GMO organic milk. Nowadays, now that I know a little bit more about the beef and cattle industry in America, so if you're coming from a different place, they don't really have to worry about this. And different countries have different regulations for different animals. So like in Europe, anyway, like the poultry, different places have good standards for poultry. Some have substandard standards right. for poultry. Some have good standards for cows. Some have bad standards for cows. In America, if I had to say, we have bad standards for cows. And so I recommend in general, if you're buying the meat, buy organic. And if you're buying like the milk, you're buying like organic, non-GMO, that kind of thing. No hormones, essentially no hormones is what you want. Sorry. No hormones used in the cattle that were used to produce this. And so knowing that now, I feel like if I redid it, I might've had slightly better results. I don't know. Maybe it'd be terrible for me, but I'd be curious to find out if that really did produce results that was different, because I know what it did the first time around. And so now I just need to compare. And that's always been in the back of my head, but I've been like really scared to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much weight did you gain? Sorry. Last one on that.
Yeah. I put on probably like, probably like 15 pounds. It was quite a bit. Initially there, like things were going okay. And then it just started feeling kind of gross and heavy. Like, I mean, that was the idea. Like this dietary plan was designed for people who are aggressively trying to put on weight. And that's fine. Some people need that. And so this was a simple solution. You know, milk does, I'm a big fan of milk. Like milk has a lot of beneficial nutrients in it. It's got protein, it's got carbs, it's got fats, like it's got vitamins, minerals, like it's got a lot of good stuff in it. So I'm a fan.
It's cost effective.
Yeah, it's very cost effective. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of it. If you can tolerate it, and most of the world is lactose intolerant. It's only us fortunate people who have descended from the small tribe in Northern Europe, and we have the capacity to tolerate lactose as we get older. But if you can tolerate it, it's incredibly nutritious, incredibly cost efficient. So I think the basis of the plan makes sense, but I think the implementation of it could have been a little bit better. I think it was just catchy. You know, it's like gallon of milk a day, go mad, go after it. I think smartly you can certainly incorporate milk. It's just that amount. I think it was taxing my poor little lactase enzyme and gut bacteria and stuff. And it just did a number on me. So, but I did put on weight. I did put on weight and I cut after. And so there was some slight beneficial results in that front as far as the musculature was concerned. And for the first week or two, maybe it was placebo, but my weights in the gym were increasing pretty steadily, like linearly. So I was feeling pretty good. I was feeling strong. And then I would just, you know, come home and have to use the bathroom four times, but,
can't get through a workout. I have to use the bathroom. What fuels you on a daily basis? What are you super passionate about?
I think there's a couple of ways I could answer this, but I think probably my favorite thing in the world is when I can take some piece of scientific literature or some piece of academia, maybe some observation I've seen with my clients, I can pull this information together, like synthesize it and create some kind of plan and then communicate that plan to some kind of client that I have in a way that they understand, in a way that is realistic and achievable for them, and then have them actually do it and then have them get results. If I've done that, it makes me feel kind of like an alchemist, or like I've got like a philosopher's stone, because I've transformed this like boring bit of academia, you know, into someone getting real results in their life, you know, some real improvement. And so that really excites me. Whenever I can do that, like, that just feels good. Other things that I really like are just in general fighting the BS misinformation that's out there with the media. Half my job is myth busting, I feel like, which is, I just love Mythbusters, so it's kind of fun.
It is a great show.
Yeah. I do still love to learn always, and I'm always constantly testing things on myself out. Like I said, I'm still a guinea pig. If you have any new diets that I've never heard of, more than happy to try them out, you know, give them a go. But learning in general is something that I'm really passionate about. So every day I try to learn something new, and I will frequently go back and look at like an old article or some work that I did several years ago. And when I look at that from several years ago, if I don't cringe at it, then it means I haven't grown enough, because I want to be so much better right now that I look at my old work and I'm like, oh boy, that is trash. Mm. Like, what were you thinking, young Casey? You know, I want to be growing so much that I can say that every single year. If I can say that every day, if I can look back on yesterday and be like, man, I'm so much better than yesterday, that'd be amazing. But, you know, growth takes time. So I got to give myself a couple of years. I don't grow as fast as maybe I would like, but I try to always be growing.
That's a great, great philosophy. I always thought the same thing when I would look back at my film from years previous and we were watching us play a game just for fun. It's like, oh God, that was bad. God, I was awful. And I thought I was so good. So to the point, it became our family motto. I'm not as good today as I will be tomorrow. Right? Just always growing, always growing. Last one, Casey, how do people get a hold of you for nutrition advice?
So I'm old school and I have an intern working on social media right now for me, but I do not have social media yet. It is still being set up. So, you know, if you really want to get in touch with me, you just email me, which is CaseyThomasRD@gmail.com. I'm pretty responsive. And if I'm not, it just means I was busy and you can always ping me again. I won't get offended by that. But, you know, I do have a LinkedIn that has not been updated in some time. Past that, you know, that's...
I like the old school. CaseyThomasRD@gmail.com. I like old school because anyway, if you go through Instagram, you go through Twitter, you go through anything, what are you going to give them? Hey, email me. Right? So here, we'll cut to the chase. Email Casey if you want to talk about custom nutrition for you. Casey, thanks, buddy.